Chapter 14. Victory and Fear. Money began changing hands like mad. It was frantic. It was as if they all realized the giant was some kind of anomaly that shouldn't be, like he could disappear any moment into a puff of smoke. And they all hustled hither and yon to settle up wagers before the magic fizzled out and Risa dissolved into thin air like a dream. They shouted at each other while hands thrust skyward. Their fingers curled in fists around purses as they strove to trace the path of their bets, moving person to person, familiar face to unfamiliar face, in a search for that chain of custody. I plunged into that mob at its thickest point, temporarily forgetting to resist physical contact with them in favor of getting to the money before Yander. I had no idea how I would hold on to it, but it didn't matter yet. I didn't have it in my hands. Getting my hands on it was the main thing, the only thing. After I had it, I could worry about keeping it away from others. The law was an ugly bitch as it applied to diggers. We rarely had much because any laws protecting our property were about as thin as a spider web, either those set down in official decree or those maintained unofficially on the far edges where sheriffs would not venture. You weren't supposed to kill a digger, strictly speaking, but the limitation was not due to any resistance to taking life. The killing of a digger meant the creation of a body that must be disposed of, and because we diggers rarely had friends or family to see our final needs, that body was a fiscal burden on the crown that must be accounted for. Not that the crown ever supplied a nice pyre. There was simply a cost incurred in the removal of the body, a cost no one wanted to pay. Killing a digger was frowned upon, like the look you might give a toddler for yanking on a dog's tail. Now consider the other direction. As a digger, I couldn't defend myself. That would amount to physically attacking a respected citizen of the crown. Typically, they stripe your back for that, unless you do real damage, lasting damage, in which case they might just lop off your head. It's why I always buried my money. It was far safer than fighting. So I didn't have the legal standing to resist Yander if he decided my winnings were his, or if he decided Ambrosius was now his. I could tell him no, that the money was mine, that the donkey was mine. But suppose he insisted. Suppose he just walked up and put his hands on my property. Suppose I tried to physically resist him. What if I had to fight him? Well, that was as good as a whipping in the square. What if I really hurt him? In the small villages, they had no hedgemen, and they probably wouldn't dirty one of their wood axes on me anyway. They would just swing me from the nearest tree branch and pitch rocks at me until I strangled. I had to get to the money before he could. I had to get home before he could beat me there, find Ambrosius, and head for the hills. And I had to do it with the world's most visible giant in tow, which I didn't know how the fuck I was gonna do. It didn't matter. The money was the main thing. None of the rest of it mattered until I had that pile of marks in my hand. By Ing and Hell, 20 whole marks. I had no idea what to do first with such a huge sum of money. I thought about the kind of experiences 20 marks could buy. It's funny now that I think of it. At that time, I don't believe Plotzdorf ever occurred to me. Log insertion. Udo's suspicion is confirmed. Gentling protocols were implemented post-embedding and activated after revitalization in segment 48F39C4A. Process deemed to be necessary for the sake of psychological smoothing. I had to find the man with whom I'd made the bet. I stood in the press, turning in slow circles. My eyes skipped off faces like stones skipped across a pond, and eventually the bodies separated to reveal Risa towering over everyone around him. His eyes locked onto mine, widened, and then he rushed at me with his arms tucked up high, close to his ribs, like small wings, as he carefully picked his way between the tiny villagers. When he stood in front of me, he dropped a hand on my shoulder, bound his fingers up in my tattered shirt, and cried, "Ah!" He wouldn't let me go after that, not until the insanity died down a bit and people gave us some more space. It was chaos with everyone surging around us seeking out their winnings, or avoiding payment, and he clung to me like I was a boulder in the center of a roaring river. His eyes were very wide, very round, and I could see the muscles standing out on his arm. I enfolded my hand over his and shouted, "I've got you. It's okay." He seemed to relax. Then I had to chase down my money. Standing in the center of the storm wasn't working at all. People rushed around and past us, surrounded us on all sides. I pulled Risa over, elbowing past bodies until we found the edge of the clearing. We turned together and looked at them all with their money-clutching fists thrust high into the air, shouting names at each other, waving, surging, ebbing, flowing, spiraling like the arms of a storm. "Stick out your leg," I said to Risa. He shook his head, so I grabbed at his knee with both hands and pulled until he put his leg where I wanted. I climbed it and stood atop his thigh, my right arm slung across his shoulders to keep from falling while he continued to hold my shirt. I could look down on them all from that height, could see down into the confusion of heads and hands, shoulders and elbows. "There," I shouted, pointing to the right of the crowd. "That's the son of a bitch right there. Take us in there, Risa. That way." He seemed confused. He took a hesitant step in the direction I pointed, and I smiled at him. Nodding, I shouted, "That's it, my boy. That way. Go get that fucker." And I held on to him, shifting somehow to his back while he continued to hold on to my shoulder, his arm bent back by his ear. He simply would not let me go. He was terrified. I planted my feet atop the shelf of his ass cheeks, which were as thickly muscled as the rest of him, and attempted to stand in such a way where the soft leather soles of my shoes would not hurt his skin. I don't think it mattered to him one way or the other. I don't think his skin works like ours does. It feels like our skin. It is smooth where it should be smooth, calloused where it should be calloused. It is warm. In some places there is hair that looks like ours, no thicker than the stuff that grows on my arms. If you pinch a bit of it between your fingers, it folds the way skin should fold. He just didn't feel things the way the rest of us did. Sometimes he'd take a cut and seemed not to even notice, and the cut always appeared diminished on the following day, even if you thought it wanted stitching when you first saw it. It would be a while before I really understood how tough he was. I rode him into the crowd like a heavy charger. He used his free arm to brush people aside, always gently. I've seen farmers reach for eggs beneath mother hens with less care than that giant took urging people apart, his hand pressing softly into their backs, exerting only enough force for them to notice, turn, and see him. Their eyes always became solemn as they backed away, as though they'd been discovered doing something shameful. Risa slipped by them all as he plunged deeper, always taking us closer to the goal. Pretty soon, we were standing beside him, Risa tapping his shoulder with a huge sausage finger. When he turned around and looked at us, his face warmed like a campfire. "The man of the hour! Congratulations to you both! That's 20 marks to me, right?" I shouted. He nodded, still smiling. I don't know why he was smiling so much. He owed me 20 marks. I figured he must have come out even better than me, and tried to imagine how the sequence of betting might have played out to put him over. I couldn't do it. He must have had his own system. Systems were the key. If you were going to support yourself with wagers, you always needed some sort of system. Systems were what helped you to sidestep the odds. "We're still resolving payments. Wait a while, and I'll have it for you. Or, if not, you can try to collect directly from Heyman and Otto. They're just over there. Come with me, in fact. If you have your friend cut a path for us, we can get there faster, and I can get you all settled up." I liked that man. He seemed a good sort. I'd never seen him before in my life. Never saw him after that day, either. He must have been from the other village with no understanding of who or what I was. It was strange to be a stranger like that. It was strange and wonderful to be unrecognized. "Get behind us and we'll bring you there," I shouted. "Many thanks," he called as he fell back into place. I lined an arm alongside Reese's face, pointing ahead at our new target as if my finger was an arrow. And when the giant stepped forward, I felt a tug at my ankle. Looking down, I saw that the man who followed us grasped the cuff of my pants. I hoped the people we sought, Haman and Audel, had my money. I could envision an immediate future in which Risa waded to and fro in the mob, a long line of debtors stretching out behind him in a tail, joined hand to hand like children. It was not to be, thank you, Seeksneet. They had funds sufficient to cover our wager. Our new friend crawled from behind Risa and shouldered his way forward, jostled here and there by the hot press of bodies. I was amazed how hot it was in the center of the crowd, as if we stood in the presence of a forge. There was a smell of many intermingled odors, bodies turned sour with sweat, stale breath, the scent of hay and timothy, of mud and blood and shit. I thought of Risa's poor bare feet and how they must be taking an almighty trampling, and resolved to get some decent clothes for him, even if the largest I found barely fit. We had to get his body covered. It was rough country up there. Even if he shrugged off physical harm, the chill and the damp would get him at some point. It was only a matter of time. Risa and I stood there. Well, I stood on Risa, anyway, while these three men put their heads together and tallied sums. I saw some coins change hands then, and a few moments later a pile of marks was pressed into my hands that was larger than I'd ever seen in my life. I took a moment to stare at them, laying there in my palm, bouncing them gently to feel their heft, feeling their oily smoothness against my skin, looking at Dittmar's profile stamped onto their faces. They glittered in the sunlight like small metal jewels. Risa, get us the fuck out of here. I don't care where for now, just get us away from this crowd. Head to the village. Let's get somewhere out of sight. It was harder to get out than it was to get in. Everyone wanted to go in toward the center, and we pushed against them, trying always to slip to the edge. It took longer because Risa wasn't willing to be any more forceful than pressing his palms against their shoulders or their chests, always moving so slowly as if he was afraid to break them. I began to bounce in place, hopping up and down on his ass, as it were, shouting in his ear to hurry it the fuck up. He ignored me, moving slow and prodding them aside like, I don't know, like puppies or something. You just couldn't get any more urgency out of him than that. I sighed and settled in to wait, wondering when it would be that Yander found us. He found us at the edge of the fucking mob, obviously. It wasn't as though Risa was difficult to spot. He stood head, shoulders, and goddamn torso above every other person in that crowd. I'll bet Yander just retreated from the whole mess the moment it kicked off and waited for us to come his way. I dismounted my giant as we closed the distance and moved to meet my nemesis. Just a minute here, Yand. Come off it, Udo. I'm not taking your money. You're not? Not all of it. This monstrosity of yours brought no small amount of honor to our village today. Brought a lot of coin into many people's hands. Those coins will circulate among us a good long while, I think. And I'll see plenty of it come my way when I sell my harvest in the square. I won't have to travel so much to make my wage now, and that's worth something. I should keep every mark, by rights. You were bereft when I stepped in to spot you. I think 5 to you is fair, isn't it?
5?
Yes, I know. And don't tell my wife about it either. She'd have the skin off my back. I figure I'm still ahead anyway. I'll have a decent pack mule in a short while, won't I? He held out his hand, and in a daze I dropped the coins in. I watched as his fingers closed around them. They disappeared forever. Yanders smiled, struck my shoulder a friendly knock, and said, "Keep your cunt-struck donkey away from my mare, Udo." He went away. I looked down into my hands. 5 marks looked very much less than 20. "Son of a whore," I muttered. They put on a big feast that night in the town square to commemorate our great victory. It was open for anyone to attend, but it was mostly our people. I thought I saw a few unfamiliar faces intermixed among the regulars, but these were as few as drops of water in a lake. I think most of the visitors were encamped outside of our village on the banks of the Ruhr. There were many children darting about, though. Maybe a lot of the children were from the other town. It is hard for me to know now. I never paid a great deal of attention to the children of our village. It was simply understood that we were not to mix, the digger and the children, and so we gave each other a wide margin, as if we both knew instinctively that we could get each other into much trouble. The feast itself had not been planned, I don't think. Much of it felt thrown together at the last minute. A large fire was kindled in the town square, right in the dirt. A number of the men built a ring of rocks big enough for a normal adult to lay inside and not touch the edges, and then they piled more rocks knee-high. They drove some stakes into the ground and suspended an iron rack across them, and when the flames were high, they laid cuts of meat over the rack. It was this, more than the nature of the men and women who bustled back and forth across the square, darting from home to home like honeybees, searching for the provisions necessary to get every belly filled, that told me this had not been planned. A planned feast always came with a goodly stag or boar stretched over the coals on a spit. The season was all wrong for a good hog from one of the farms, so they slaughtered a few goats, skinned them, gutted and quartered them down, and threw the meat over the fire to smoke and drip into the coals while we all stood around and waited for it, drooling. Every so often, one of the men would take up a handful of salt and cast it into the air over the rack, and all of us who watched would sigh as it floated down to the meat like snow. Then it would alight on that sizzling, dripping flesh, fade and seep into the fibers, and the smell reached out to us on billows of smoke, and we all stood around trying to resist the need to grab off a hunk and go running for cover. Risa was pulled along from group to group like a prize, and after he realized that the villagers all loved him, he was able to relax. He still dragged me around everywhere he went, though. He clung to me like an island, like I was the only safe harbor in a storm. He kept his hand bound up in my shirt, sometimes clutching so damned hard that he ripped it a little at the seam. So I kept my hand around his wrist and held on tight to minimize the damage. Sometimes he would jerk his head back over his shoulder to look at me, as if I might not be there. As if, I suppose, I might have slipped from my shirt and disappeared. I was always there when he looked. He always smiled when he saw me. I think he was relieved every time. That look of panic was always there on his face at first, never diminished. And the smile was always wide and shaky. He was so much like a child. They passed him around, like I said, which means they passed me around too. I didn't like it at first, but most of them ignored me. Or they tolerated me, maybe. I don't know. They could tell I was there. They weren't stepping on me or running into me. There was that same open space around me, the same space I was always used to having, that little buffer of air that protected them from touching me. So they damn sure knew I was there, but I didn't get the same looks I was used to. I didn't feel the hate the way I was used to. I was there, and simply ignored. And it was wonderful. It was all I'd ever dreamed of. At some point, somebody thrust a tankard of ale into Reese's hand. He sniffed it carefully, and then looked at me for guidance. So I nodded and pretended to drink from an invisible cup. He swallowed the entire thing in a sip. It was insane. A tankard that size would have kept me busy for a good lazy while, and that damn giant tossed it back like it was a glass of mead. I don't think it even made a mouthful for him. I figured the son of a bitch just opened his throat and let it pour. Then he stood there, holding the empty tankard like he didn't know what to do with it, and someone standing close by took it from him. The person who took it was laughing like a donkey, just braying across the square like an animal, and the others around him laughed as well. And then there was another tankard like the last, thrust into his hand like the last, but this time another one came as well, and was handed to me. I stared at the woman who had given it to me, and she smiled back. "Drink, Udo," she sang out, and then laughed more and spun away to disappear into the crowd like a fairy. Risa was looking at me again. I can remember that. I don't remember very much after that. The others surrounding us looked at me along with Risa. Maybe they were staring at me. and they all seemed to be waiting for something. So I took a drink. When I put the tankard to my mouth, they all cheered, and Risa cheered with them, though he didn't seem to understand the meaning of cheering. Some people reached out to slap me on the shoulders, and I heard my name called out again and again, and then the tankard was taken away and replaced by another. I drank again, and they cheered again. I didn't know what to do. I wanted very much to get away at that point, to go down to the river and dunk my head, or to go to the alehouse, which I knew would be empty, and find a dark corner. I wanted to go buy a cask of beer and take it home to my shack and lock the door. I couldn't do any of these things. Risa held on to me like a lock-jawed hound, as if I was his fucking prisoner. I was his fucking prisoner, come to that. I'll bet if I'd shrugged out of my shirt, he would have wrapped an arm around my waist and thrown me up on a shoulder. There was no escape, no way to get away, to hide myself and not be seen. I tried to step behind Risa, but they surrounded us on all sides. Another tankard was placed into my hands. I blinked my eyes several times until I could see again, and discovered it was Anderlin who had given it to me.
"Are you well, Udo?" he asked.
"I don't know what the fuck I am." He smiled and knocked his tankard against mine.
"Sail this current gently, Udo. There is no trickery here. They plan no evil against you. Take it gently. Soon enough you'll realize that they are only grateful. This village has not dominated a Kraftkrieg so thoroughly for a generation."
"I can't. It—"
"Stop it, Udo. Here, give me that tankard. Wipe your eyes. Don't let them see. Don't let the bastards see what they've done. Clean yourself up."
I did. Anderlin smiled and passed my tankard back.
"That's better. Keep on like that. Take it gently, Udo. The only one who can ruin this now is you. Take it gently, and remember, there is no other shoe."
He dissolved into the crowd then, or the crowd surged up and swallowed him whole. The result was the same either way, no matter which it was. I drank slowly, trying to make his advice stick. Take it gently. I would try. Pretty soon we started in on the goat. There was more food besides the meat, but I don't know what any of it was. It was all laid out over a table on wooden platters and bowls, and a large crowd of people had formed around it like flies swarming over a carcass, circling around it like a press of livestock ringing a trough. Most of the time I lived on stale bread or stew that was halfway turned, so a hunk of fresh meat was a feast. I felt as though nothing more was needed. The beer continued to flow as well, and I kept drinking it as long as they kept handing it over. My bladder overfilled, of course, and that was its own adventure, as fucking Risa came along for the journey, still unwilling to turn me loose. I went around the back of the alehouse where most of the others went anyway, and stood at the corner while Risa hid around the side. His arm reached around the edge of the building to keep in contact with my shirt while I unloaded like I was his prisoner. And I fucking well was. And as anyone who has ever engaged in a night of drinking knows, once you start pissing, it never stops. Only it comes faster and faster as the night wears on, so that before long it seems like you've got to do it every few breaths, and him insisting on coming along for the adventure every time. All of the people who were so busy crowding him refused to let Risa get away for very long. So after a while, I had a whole procession of them following along with me whenever I went to relieve myself. It was Udo, then Risa, and then about 10 or 15 other people, all walking in a line like a family of ducks to the alehouse. And I'd go around the corner while they all stayed on the other side, chattering at the giant constantly, telling him how wonderful he was, getting him to repeat certain of their words or phrases, laughing their stupid asses off whenever they could get him to curse. It was distracting. Sometimes I had to jam my eyes shut and sing a little song in my head just to get the flow moving. And the rest of them were keeping up, matching me drink for drink as the night wore on, and we all got falling down drunk together. I think Risa was the only one of us who wasn't affected by the beer at all. He kept putting it away, and I swear to his divine mother he never had to piss, not once the entire evening. I don't know where he put it all. One drink after the next, and I kept asking him, Well, do you have to go now, Risa? And he would just shake his head. Sometimes I thought he was shaking his head because he didn't understand me, and I kept an eye between his feet to see if he might let it go unexpectedly. I had yet to see him urinate or shit by that point. And honestly, having seen it now, I can say it's a sight you want to avoid as long as you can. I think most horses make smaller piles than that damn giant. We all got famously drunk together. So drunk that time stopped. The night stopped aging around us, and we continued. By Zintgunt's light, the air became chilly, and I started to worry about the state of the giant's clothing. He was still just wearing the sack loincloth I'd made for him. I asked around for a while, speaking first to husbands and finally to the wives directly, to see if we had any clothing for him. But of course, there was nothing that would fit. They said two or three of the women would have to work for the next week on their looms to have enough fabric to cover him. Then they discussed taking some of their husband's old clothing, cutting it all up into scraps, and then sewing it back together in a kind of patchwork large enough to fit him. But that was a thing for the following day. On that night, we gave ourselves to drinking. Risa was finally comfortable enough to let me go toward the end of the evening. The other villagers seemed to surge around him even more then, as if they sensed him taking his ease, and they became more brave. Some of the women began to touch him. They touched his arms, mostly, and sometimes his thighs. Even the men began to touch him. It was as if they couldn't believe their eyes, as if they needed the feeling of his skin under their hands to prove he was there. He froze up when they first did this, parts of his flanks twitching and jerking like horseflesh wherever their fingertips landed. After some time, he began to smile at them, as if they'd tickled his skin, and he liked it. And of course, that only made them more bold. Matthias's wife Lena came close and peeked under his loincloth as the others roared laughter. I looked around nervously for her husband, but could see him nowhere at all, which I considered to be his fault ultimately. He knew the rumors, I'm sure, just as well as the rest of us. But he wasn't around then. Perhaps he was flirting with someone's wife, and Lena was free to experiment. Risa didn't seem to understand what she was looking for when she tugged at the sackcloth, and so he pinched the bottom edge between his fingers and lifted to discover what she sought after. That horse cock of his came tumbling out for everyone to see, and then that became its own kind of spectacle. All of the men standing around whistled in appreciation. It was like they were so stunned by its size that they forgot to be embarrassed by the monster's appearance. They weren't even shamed at their own comparative inadequacy, like normal men ought to be. It was as if they stared at an animal. I half expected one of them to grab Reese's ass and start examining his teeth next. They never got the chance. Lena began laughing gleefully as soon as Risa exposed himself and darted in. "Look at my new pet," she hollered as she put her back to his thighs, reached around, grabbed his cock and rested it on her shoulder. It hung there like a dead mink, kind of rolling over the top and pointing down at her left breast. Everyone else began to laugh as though they would die. Even me, I must admit. It was just so damned shocking that we didn't know how to respond, and the only thing we could do was laugh. It was the only thing that made any sense. The laughter must have egged Lena on. You could see her visibly swell in stature as everyone laughed along, and to drive the joke home, she began to pet it like it was her friend. I glanced up at Risa to see if he was still okay, but I needn't have worried. He seemed fairly confused by what was happening. But he sure didn't seem to mind either. His cock didn't seem to mind at all. The laughter turned to gasps and choking pretty soon when the thing began to stir. And then when it reached toward her hand, Lena gasped as well and dove away from the thing like it was a snake. It stretched after her as she backed away into the crowd, her eyes and mouth wide circles of amazement, and all the rest of us laughing so hard our ribs felt on the verge of breaking. Risa still looked around, confused, and then he looked down at his cock and gave it an experimental slap. That's about the point where some of the men started falling to their knees. Matthias came soon after to break up the fun. He grabbed his wife, face as red as a beet, and dragged her away by the arm, while the rest of us jeered after them. The monster's monster went back into hiding, and we were able to regain a little composure after Lena was gone. I don't remember much more from that evening. People eventually started falling out right there in the square, just dropping in the dirt and going to sleep. They laid up against building walls, on tables, on benches. They fell asleep in chairs, or curled up around the watering troughs, or leaned up against tree trunks. There were heads pillowed atop thighs, women sleeping on men, men sleeping on women, even men on men and women on women. There was no sex in the air at all. They'd drunk themselves too far for sex to be a possibility. In their minds, there was only room for sleep, room enough for the long dream, and the hangover with which they would pay for their revelry. I tried to sleep among them and could not. Risa slept curled up by the smoldering coals of the fire. There were so many bodies piled up next to him, walling him in, that I knew there was no danger of him taking on a chill. The village had claimed him now. He was one of theirs. I knew he would be safe. As I walked home, I thought of how strange the night had been. I'd not been turned away, as was usual. I was tolerated. And in fact, later they laughed along with me. We laughed together without malice, and I could not understand why. I did not understand why that night should be any different than the others, and eventually I decided it must be due to the giant, that maybe they adopted me along with him. I wondered if they would remember on the following day, or if I would go back to being simply Udo the Digger, and Risa would go on to be the center of the village, sought after and fought over like a prized horse or ox. I wondered if I would be pushed back to my shack, where I belonged, while the giant went on. I wondered if the giant would go away forever. I found my way into Ambrosius's pen and lay up against the warmth of his ribs. He lifted his head and nuzzled me with his nose, then lay back down in the straw. We farted together, loudly, and slept. Later that morning, I don't remember when, Risa came home as well. He let himself into the shack, and shortly after, began to snore.